This is the official EFL podcast.
Hello again and welcome to a special edition of the podcast. Gary Rowett joins me. Gary, you're going to have a talk through your career, playing days and your managerial career. Firstly, I want to talk about that playing career. What was Gary Rowett like as a player? A defender, of course. A lot of people who've recently come into following the game won't be aware of your career. Just tell us.
I'm not that old, am I? I played predominantly. It's funny because I started as a young player at Cambridge United as a forward. And I think what you find as an attacking player, if you don't actually score many goals or set many up, you start moving backwards very quickly. And that's what I did. So I started as an attacker and ended up really kind of settling into right back, right centre back, right wing back, whichever role it was in the defence. And had a decent career. I mean, I was obviously cut short by injury at sort of 28, really. I finished at 30, but I was effectively injured at 28. And it always felt as though I'd kind of not quite hit the level that perhaps I was capable of hitting. But I suppose that's a lot of players would look back and think they maybe could have done a bit more. But it was OK. I played in the Championship, played in the Premier League, and had a spell in some lower leagues as well, which I quite like. I quite enjoy the fact that I've played in quite a lot of different leagues. I mean, I had a couple of years or 18 months in the Conference. When I finished, I came back with Burton, just part-time.
That must have been a bit of a culture shock. We'll get onto that later on.
I loved it. That's what football's about, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. You mentioned they starting your career out, in your playing career. You started out at Cambridge, of course. When did you know you were set out for a career in football, though?
Well, it's really funny, because I grew up on the Isle of Wight, and I remember the day vividly. I'd never really been for trials anywhere. I had a couple of lads at my school. We had a really good school team. One was at Norwich as a schoolboy. One was at Southampton as a schoolboy. But I'd never really been involved in that type of thing. So it felt as though it sort of passed me by. I felt like I had the ability to be a professional footballer, but it passed me by. I'd got accepted for a college course in Portsmouth. And to get to the ferry, which was in Ryde at the time, I lived in Cowes, which is obviously a yachting area, great place to live. To get to Ryde, I had to go and get a motorbike. So I'd met my dad down in Cowes to have a look at a motorbike, because he always had bikes, just a little 50cc, just to get me there every morning. And as I was waiting for my dad, he came down and says, listen, you might as well forget the motorbike, because you've been offered an apprenticeship at Cambridge United. And it was such a shock. I mean, it was such, you know, I was literally, I think, about 2 months from leaving school and starting college. So it was that close. You know, if I look back at that time, we played in the national schools competition. We played against a team in Thetford, which is obviously sort of Norfolk area, so not too far from Cambridge. And obviously I'd been spotted by one of the scouts there. So I went up to Cambridge, trained there for a week. It wasn't quite how they said it, because there was actually two of us and it was almost like a fight for one spot, so it was a little bit weird, but I ended up getting taken on and literally 2 months later I'm starting my apprenticeship, having left home at 16. So it was all a bit quick, but fantastic at the same time.
A very successful Cambridge team at the time as well, when you first came into it, of course. What was it like to play a part in that team that finished fifth in the old second division, of course, the club's most successful ever team?
Well, it's incredible, really. I mean, the season I joined, I think that summer, they won the playoffs to get promoted into the Football League, or from the League Two into League One. I can't quite remember which way, but I knew that they'd been really, really successful. And it was such an incredible environment to go into. I mean, you know, any one of John Beck's teams or clubs, you go in as a 16-year-old, you're going to learn pretty quickly about football life. As it were, because it was pretty brutal, you know, in terms of some of the characters around. They were great characters, but tough people, do you know what I mean? And as a 16-year-old young lad, you were effectively bullied for the first 2 years of your life, and it was sink or swim. You either got through it and got into the team, or you didn't get through it, and that was that. So it was really, really interesting time, but learned a lot of things from the methods, you know, not necessarily how they played, but the methods in which they used to get the players to play that way. Which I then took on later into sort of my coaching career, or some aspects of it. But as a player, it was great. You know, I think after a year, I was in the first team. So at 17, I was in the first team. I nearly got released after a year because I was not great towards the end of my first year apprenticeship. Second year, I came back pre-season, I was in the team. So that's how, I say to young players, that's how quick it can swing sometimes. Being out the game, finishing your career, to making a career.
You know, shows you should never give up, really.
Exactly. You've got to be persistent, and you've got to kind of recognise what you have, because at that time I probably didn't. And it was only the second year that I started to realise this is almost like a last chance. Got into the team at 17. As you say, that season, or one of the seasons, I think we were top of the what's effectively now the Championship. Like you said earlier, the old second division. Around Christmas. So if you think about that now, they went through the leagues consecutively, and I think they would have been the only team to ever have done it, but couldn't quite make that next step because essentially everyone worked out how we played, and I think we ended up finishing in the playoffs.
Yeah, finishing the playoffs, you know, first taste of playoff defeat for you as well. I'm guessing at that stage of your career, that must have been pretty tough to take, you know, getting into the team, having that chance of playing in the top flight, and, you know, you've been snatched away from you, so...
It's funny you say that. I'd never really thought about it like that because I think I came out of the team with about 10 games to go. Any young player, you dip in and out of the first team. I think I played about 15 times that season. And I don't remember a bit. I don't even think I was in the squad for the playoff game. So I think when you're 17, 18, you know, unfortunately, you're pretty self-centred in a lot of ways, and it didn't feel necessarily like it was... like I was kind of part of that process, you know, because I hadn't been involved in the squad. And I think by that stage, we'd had such a poor end of the season. I think everyone kind of knew we weren't going to get through to Wembley and through to the Premier League. So it was disappointing for the club, but I think they'd punched so far above their weight that it was hard to be too disappointed by a season where they finished in the playoffs.
Mm. But like you say, you had those, you know, consecutive years where you did get that promotion, and, you know, a lot of teams did that at the time, didn't they? They had those few years. I mean, the last team to win the old First Division, Leeds, did that 2 years prior. They got promoted from Division Two, so, you know, the dream could have always been there. It was always realistic, potentially.
Well, it is. I think it's something that you learn as a player, something you learn as a coach and a manager, that sometimes if you can get a team and get momentum, momentum's an incredible thing, because, you know, you've got a team that knows exactly how they play, knows exactly what they're all about. There's a great synergy in terms of that group of players and what they can achieve. And it just goes to show, really, football's not about... Of course, it's about individual talent. Of course, it's about having top players. If you want to win, let's say, the Premier League, you've got to have top players. But the lower down you go, sometimes, you know, teams without that talent, without that individual brilliance, and without that money sometimes, can climb the way through. And it's that momentum. And you often see it, don't you? A team gets promoted... The season after it happened at Burton, you know, the Burton team, after we'd left, they got promoted. They then went again and got promoted again, and then did quite well in the Championship. So, you know, sometimes you think there's a ceiling for certain teams, but actually there's not. I mean, often it's the Championship or the top in the League One. But it's incredible to see what teams, an underdog team, can actually do.
Yeah, like you say there, you know, teams like Lincoln, Luton have done similar things in recent years. Coming back to you, though... you then earned a move to Everton after impressing in the following season as well. Not a bad season for Cambridge again. Just tell us how that move all came about, because obviously that's a massive step up, big football club.
Yeah, I'd been linked with a lot of clubs. I'd scored a few goals. I scored against Oldham in the Cup. Oldham were a Prem team at the time. I scored against Oldham in the effectively the League Cup. We knocked them out. So I'd start to get a few sort of... clubs coming to watch me. You know, you used to get the old... John Beck was clever at the time. He used to put the scouting list up before games. And you'd look, and as a 17-year-old, I'd be looking, and some of the first team would be like, right, well, they ain't watching us. So they're obviously watching you. So there's a little bit of pressure, but at the same time, you felt there was a great opportunity. I went to... Slightly different back then, because you would never really do it now, but I went to train with QPR for a week, who were a Premier League team at the time. Gerry Francis was the manager. Then I went to train at Norwich, where Mike Walker was the manager. And then nothing happened for 2 or 3 weeks. I think QPR were very close to signing me, but nothing happened. And Mike Walker, essentially, I probably knew, he went to Everton around sort of February time of that season. Took me in as one of the first signings. Not obviously a signing to necessarily go and play straight away in the first team. Although I felt, for some reason, that's what... Because I played nearly 100 times for Cambridge at the time, so you got used to that first team football, and you think, well, you know, surely I'm going to Everton to play. And obviously you're now a young player again, you know, playing in the B team on a Saturday morning against the likes of Marine, playing in the reserves in the week with some top players. And it was a really interesting move for me. I think it came too soon, because I don't think I quite I don't mean I was quite ready to play at that level. I played four times, I made four appearances, but as a sub, I think I started at Man United one game, which was an incredible experience. And I had a great time there, learnt an awful lot. Socially, it was probably too good in Liverpool because I used to go out with a lot of the young lads and enjoy myself. So,
and then that sort of era, 90s era.
And that sort of era, that was acceptable. You know, that's what you did. We used to go and play on a Saturday morning and then you'd go straight out, you know, Saturday lunchtime, which I know sounds terrible, but at that age, you probably don't really appreciate what you've got and what opportunity you've got. And it was only when I then made my next move that I really started to piece together what it was to be dedicated to being a professional footballer. But it was a great time, great experience, some top players, you know, and thoroughly enjoyed my time. I met my wife up there as well, or my future wife rather, so the socialising wasn't all bad.
Wasn't all in vain. You touched on there, the importance of getting, you know, game time and touching on, you know, your playing when you were younger for Cambridge. How important do you think, looking back now, was that experience of playing first team football at such a young age for you?
Incredible. I say to any young player now, when players are, what should I do? Should I go out on loan? Should I do this? Should I do that? And I said, listen, for me personally, and I know there's some anomalies, I don't think you can ever say there's one rule for everybody. You see some young players come straight into a first team and go straight into it, or play 10 games and still have a fantastic career and don't go out on loan. But for me, until you've played 40 games at any level, you know, whether that's Conference, whether that's Conference North, whether that's League One, League Two, whether that's Premier League, whatever that is, you never really truly know what it is to be a real player, where results matter every single weekend. It matters to the fans, it matters to the club, the staff around the club, you know. So I always say to players, whatever level it is, you know, even if it's not the level you see yourself at, go and play a season, go and play 40 games at a young age. I see too many players in under 23 teams at 22, 23 years old, and you think, look at the average age of a player that plays in the Championship or Premier League. The majority who have been in football clubs are 18, 19. So if you're 22, still not playing in the first team, my advice is move on and play for a first team, you know. So I think that's important to play, to harden yourself mentally, to harden yourself physically, to get the confidence of playing regularly, to play in front of a big crowd or a crowd that it matters. For me, that is vastly important. And like I said, it's not for everybody, but I think a lot of young players, you know, you see how much they progress as a player when they go and play for a season somewhere. And they often come back to their parent club and get in the first team and they're ready then.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot of the current England team, of course, as well. But coming back to you, you know, Everton had that such a successful time. The first year you came, I think they won the FA Cup, didn't they? What was it like? You know, you weren't obviously a massive part of it in terms of playing, but what was it like to be around a team that was, you know, successful like that, to the level of winning the trophy?
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, I had some sort of experience. I signed at the same time as Anders Limpar, and obviously Anders was an incredible player of sort of international renown at the time. You know, I think he'd signed from Arsenal. But it was interesting because I signed at the same time, I was in the same hotel and I used to hang around a little bit with him. So you'd learn. So again, for a 19-year-old lad, knocking around with Anders Limpar around Liverpool, you know, it was incredible. I mean, often we'd be in the casino because he loved a bit of a gamble. But it was an incredible experience. Players like Duncan Ferguson joining the club, players like Dave Watson at the club, you know, seasoned professionals that have played hundreds and hundreds of Premier League games. It was an incredible experience. And it was, I think I signed in March, and then it was the end of the following season they got in the FA Cup final. I was close to making, I think it was Tottenham in the semi-finals, I was close to making the squad for that, but didn't. And ended up travelling down almost like on a sort of staff bus to Wembley. But the experience was incredible, to see the players that you're training with day in, day out, playing at Wembley. You know, for a young player, if that doesn't inspire you, then, you know, you need to get out of the game. So it was a fabulous experience. I think they had the party afterwards in the Dorchester. And that was also an interesting experience. So there was a few players that enjoyed themselves that night. But yeah, that's what it was. And so again, it was, I'd been at Cambridge, quite successful in terms of a team, not necessarily for me individually. Been to Everton, a little bit of success, you know, as Joe Royal obviously took over Mike Walker. He took them to Wembley. It was just a great environment to be in. Again, you're learning all the time. You perhaps don't realise you are at the time, but you're learning all the time. And, you know, you're really just waiting for your chance to come. It makes you even hungry. I went alone at the end of that season to Blackpool. And again, going back to what I said earlier, it was great just going to play football. I had a chance of Southend in League One under Peter Taylor, ironically. I'm sure later you'll mention Leicester. Or I had Blackpool, which was an hour away, and it was League Two. And for me, it didn't really matter because I didn't see myself at any of those clubs permanently. Sam Allardyce was the manager at Blackpool. I went and played 17 games for them towards the end of the season, which was brilliant. You know, that's, again, it's just playing again, getting into that groove again and thoroughly enjoyable. But, yeah, great experience to be. I mean, it's a massive club, Everton. I mean, when you sit in that stand watching, and when you see the training ground, obviously the new training ground is even better. But you know, it's a huge, huge club with you know, incredible history.
Mm. And then you eventually got your move to Derby after that. I take it that's all about having the chance again to play, you know, full first team football. I take it that was the behind the decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because I think Craig Short was moving in the other direction. Shorty was at Derby when I was manager there, working with the academy, and often reminded him I was basically his little toe as part of a deal, because I think his was about £2.5 million and mine was about £300,000. But I think Derby got a reasonable deal because they got a motivated player. I got a player at a good age. I think I was about 21.
And you played all the games?
When I first went there and went straight into the team and played straight away in the Championship. So actually, I think it was a brilliant move for me, and I think it was a reasonably good move in terms of value for them, I like to think. But it came about quite strange. I got called into Joe Rawls' office. It was actually the start of the next season. I thought I might move that summer, and nothing happened. I went back, and I think it was like the first day of pre-season, which always baffles me why these things happen, but of course, you can't really control them. And I remember Joe sitting me down and saying, "Listen, son, you know, I've had an offer. You know, I just don't think you quite got the eye of the tiger." That's what he said to me. And I look back now, and he was actually right. At that moment in time, I've used that as motivation throughout my playing career. Every time I started a game, I always thought about Joe's words, and it motivated me to show him a little bit, or to subliminally try and prove him. But he was right. You know, I actually if I saw him today, I'd thank him for what he said to me, because it inspired me to realise that I hadn't really done anything, and I needed to prove that I had got that. And maybe I was playing, you know, without a lack of maybe aggression, you know, motivation. So from then on, really, I think my career kind of advanced quite quickly in terms of playing consistently a lot better. But that's how it came about. And I'd not even thought about it. I went down to Derby, met Jim Smith, and Jim was such an infectious character. You couldn't help but want to sign for him. You know, he's the type of manager you just wanted to play for.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're doing yourself a bit of a disservice there. You know, you tended to go where you went, success seemed to follow. You know, you didn't play a part in that team as much as you may have wanted at Everton, but you know, you still won the FA Cup. You know, and then you had that massive successful season at Derby, winning promotion in that first year. Was that the highlight of your playing career, winning that promotion?
Yeah, I think it was one of the highlights. I think that I had. Obviously, I think the season after, or the season after that, where it was our first season at Pride Park, was probably one of the highlights in terms of performance. You know, I felt as though we had a really strong season. We'd beaten teams like Arsenal at home, and you know, to play in a team like that regularly. And from my own point of view, I think my spell at Birmingham was also a good one. But I think in terms of achievements, yeah, it's the only promotion I had as a player, and it was a great season because I think at the time, Jim had took over from Arthur Cox or took over from that sort of era. The money was no longer there. So they spent a lot of money at the time, Derby. I don't know if you remember, but around that period, Derby had spent quite a lot to get into the Premier League, but hadn't managed to do so. And Jim came, a load of free transfers, put them all together. And we just had an incredible relationship, all the players. We used to go out all the time together. We used to go out as couples. We used to go out as individually. The players did everything together. Everyone lived in a similar area, socialised outside of a game, you know, with families. And it just kind of created this real bond. And we started the season quite poorly. I think I did my cartilage first game in against Port Vale. I was out for about 6 weeks. Nothing to do with me being out, by the way, but I think we're about sixth from bottom. after that period. And we went on I think Jim changed for, we signed Igor Stimac. We played away at Tranmere. I remember it really succinctly because I was playing right back at the time and Igor was right centre back. And every time I turned round, he was in a very unusual position for a centre back. And we lost 5-1. But you could see his class and you could see how good he was as a player. But you just felt probably as a back four in a two central defenders, it probably wasn't suited. So Jim changed formation. Steve was there, McLaren at the time. Jim changed formation to a back five. And it just literally clicked together like you've never known. Probably I've never experienced anything quite like that again, as a player certainly. And we went 20 games unbeaten in the Championship. Next thing you know, I think we were either top or second and Sunderland, and we battled it out till the end of that season, and both teams went up, and it was just an incredible season to be part of.
Yeah, and obviously more success followed the following seasons, but like you touched on earlier, playing under, you know, an iconic manager now, if we look back at it, in Jim Smith. Just tell us how much influence he had on your career as well, looking back now, you know, in bringing it into your management and into your playing career.
Well, Jim was just such an infectious person. I mean, he had great experience and knowledge of football, but he wasn't necessarily, you know, he would have been tactical in terms of how he felt, but wouldn't have portrayed it in the way that some managers would do now, of course.
Because as the game changed.
It was different then, you know. The tactics kind of, a manager had the tactics. He'd select his team and you wouldn't find out that much as a player. It was a very simple game back then. But Steve McLaren obviously was excellent tactically. But Jim was a man manager, Jim was incredible. Jim, he just had this way, and I remember it, you know, he'd leave you out. So you'd find out you weren't playing. You'd be absolutely raging, you'd go and see him. And you'd come out laughing and you couldn't work out how he'd done it. And that was, for me, that was just the essence of man management. He just diffused situations so uniquely that, you know, you can't help but learn. It's difficult to learn too much off someone like that because you can't be someone like that. You can't do it in the same way because it was all down to his character and his...
You've got to be your own man.
You've got to be your own man. But what you could learn is, you know, if you treat players honestly with respect and, you know, and you try to inject a little bit of humour at times into certain things, but you get a good response because people want to enjoy coming into work. People want you to be honest with them. I don't think any walk of life's any different. But Jim was brilliant at that, and those things you take away from being at Derby amongst many others.
Like I said, impressive few seasons in the Premier League followed. Was one of the highlights, I know you didn't play in the game, but the Old Trafford match with, you know, Paolo Wanchope, what was that experience like to just be a part of?
Well, that was the only game I missed that season. I mean, what a game to miss. That's the only one they ever show on the highlights on TV. And everyone's like, oh, did you play in that? No, I didn't. I remember being in the stand. I was suspended for that one game. I don't know whether it was bookings or sending offs. I can't remember. But I remember it was the first time I think Christian Daly and Paul McGrath played as a central defensive partnership, because we were short in that area. Obviously, me being suspended, Christian did really, really well. Good mate of mine. But I remember watching the game. Because back then, as a player, I don't know how it works now necessarily for some of the players at that level, but you would travel with a team still. You wanted to be part of the day, you know, because at the end of the day, they were your teammates. And if, even though you were suspended, you wanted to be there in the dressing room and try and just give you a little bit back. And I remember watching in the stand, and I remember Choppy picking the ball up and just thinking, what's he doing? What is he doing? Why is he still... And you just... So for the first moment, it was like incredulous. And then you had a spell where you thought, he's getting closer to the goal here. Maybe he's got half a chance because he hadn't been there that long. And he's such an unpredictable player. And even as a player at first, you know, watching him train, you thought, I'm not sure about this guy. I'm not really sure. You could see he had something, but I'm not sure. But then the more he played against you, the more you thought, he's so difficult to play against. And that goal he scored there was you know, he'd do that quite often in training. He was so awkward, he was so strong, he was so athletic. But, you know, looking back now, the goal doesn't surprise me. It's still an amazing goal to watch. I mean, it's probably got to be one of the best goals scored against Man United at Old Trafford, I would imagine, even now. Because it was truly, truly individually brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a career talking about that goal.
Absolutely.
That goal, I suppose. Yeah. Was Derby where you felt most at home in your career? Obviously, you know, still live in and around the area now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky to come down to Derby. I mean, you know, as an area you can see. I mean, Derbyshire is an area. I mean, it's some beautiful, beautiful places. I mean, you know, I live not too far from the Peak District. It's an amazing place. So I've ended up staying here, regardless of where I've played, you know, and it's really where I call home for my family. You know, all my kids, bar one, have been born here. And it's a great place, and I wouldn't move, you know. But when I first signed, you know, it was a great time, you know, to have 3 years, a couple of years at the baseball ground, brilliant, a season and a little bit at Pride Park. I mean, I've been very lucky that having played for, you know, teams fairly locally, I've been able to travel. But it's probably the place that I would call home. It's not really home for me because I wasn't brought up here. None of my family have been brought up in this area, apart from my kids. But we still feel as a family, this is where we are, and this is where we'll stay. You know, so that's why I've had such an affinity to Derby. I mean, I'm sure you'll talk about it after, but people probably then find that strange that I then left Derby as manager. But there were reasons for that, and you can't always tell people those reasons, really, you know, as a manager when you leave. So, but I love the area. You know, I think it's a great football club. You know, and I genuinely hope they can get back to those Premier League days.
Yeah, well, like I said, like you mentioned there, we'll touch on that a little bit later on. But you then had another successful season in the Premier League. One of the most successful years ever for Derby in the Premier League. Probably the most successful year ever. You went on to then move to Birmingham, though. How tough was that season in the Championship? You know, just the 49 games you played that year.
Is that all?
Yeah, I mean, the transition, though, from the Premier League to the relentless nature of the Championship, playing all those games and playing in those playoff semi-finals.
Yeah.
How was that for you, you know, coming back down in your career?
Well, it's funny, because when you talk about it now, or when you say sort of relentless nature, and I would say that as a manager describing the Championship, but having been in League 2, League 1 and the Championship previously, for me, you want to play games. I'd rather play 60 games a season and than train every single day and play 30 games. Do you know what I mean? At that point, it was just about games. You know, as a young player, I used to count how many games I'd played. I had this vision. I wanted to get to, like, you know, I didn't manage to, but I wanted to get to, like, say I've played 500 league games. You know, what a great thing to be able to say in your career, because at that point, you don't know. You might have played 200. You know what I mean? So you want to be able to be amongst this group of players that could say I've played for 15 years as a professional and be proud of that. You know, it wasn't really about necessarily just about achievements. It was about racking up all those games. So when I've always had maybe sometimes a bit too impetuously. I mean, I've moved around a lot as a kid because of my dad's job. And so sometimes I've had to curtail that a little bit. I've quite enjoyed moving to different clubs as a player. And I've always felt as though if I'm not wanted somewhere, I'd rather go somewhere where I'm wanted. And that's just been a very simple motto of mine. And Jim Smith pulled me in that start of that season, said, look, we've had an offer for you. I think it's a really good offer. I felt at the time it was quite a reasonably cheap offer. I think it was about £1 million, which, to say, I think I'd played in 71 of Derby's 76 Premier League games or something in the previous two seasons. So it wasn't like I was a bit part player. But I felt, you know what?
You're a good age as well.
Yeah, if I need to move back down again to kickstart where I need to go, then that's what I'll do. And Birmingham was a massive club. Went there, they made me feel, Trevor Francis, to be fair to him, was great. He made you feel like, you know, you were the main player. You were coming here to be the main player. Of course, there was lots of other good players. But I had two really good seasons. You know, I think we got in the playoffs twice. Difficult games. I remember the first one against Watford was such a tough game. We lost 1-0 at their place. We scored after 3 minutes at St Andrews. That's probably one of the best atmospheres I've ever remembered at a game. It was an absolutely incredible atmosphere. We couldn't quite get the winner. Went to a penalty shootout, ended up losing. I mean, it's another sort of whole story in itself of a whole penalty shootout. It's a fiasco. And then we played Barnsley the year after, and I think we were 4-0 down after 25 minutes. So it's probably the worst start to a playoff game I can ever remember. But personally, you know, I had two great seasons. I think I got voted in the PFA Team of the Year twice. And I just felt as though that was probably the first time, you know, I felt that was my best football. You know, I know it was a Championship. I know I'd played in the Premier League, but to me, that was my best football. And I kind of kicked on from there. And unfortunately, injury really stopped me kicking on to where I felt I could be. But I had two really, really good seasons there. I loved my time at Birmingham.
And the second season at Birmingham, do you know how many games you played that season?
was it 50? Was it 50 or something?
54.
54?
Games.
That's nothing. I know, again now.
And yeah, of course, you touched on, you had that playoff defeat at the end of it again. How, you've not had the best relationship with the playoffs, have you? Overall?
No, I've had a really poor relationship with the playoffs.
Why is that? Is that because of the pressure or just...
No, I don't know. I mean, listen, you're one person. I think it's like anything, isn't it? You're one person as a player. You're one person in 11. You know, so I don't think you can necessarily control what happens in those games, but twice. I mean, really, I see it as twice as a player in the playoffs. I don't really see the Cambridge one because I wasn't involved. Twice as a player and, well, three times as a manager. Not been overly lucky in the playoffs. I don't think we've had an awful lot of luck, but yeah, it is what it is. It just makes you more determined to... ideally not have to go in the playoffs because it's a sod of a thing. You know, you go and lose 4 weeks of your summer and then losing the playoffs, then all of a sudden not only have you wasted some valuable recovery time, but you've also, it's a horrible thing to do. But hey, listen, sometimes you've got to see it as you've achieved something by getting there. But of course, any manager or any player wants to win those games. It's the best way to go up. People say that all the time. It's the most euphoric way of going up, but I'm yet to expect. Well, so they tell me.
you then, of course, you know, not like football fans who have to go through the heartbreak of the playoffs and then continue following the teams. You weren't to move then, £3 million transfer, I believe it was, back to the Premier League with Leicester, a team, again, who seemed to be on the up, playing in the UEFA Cup as well that season, yeah. Playing in Europe. What was that experience like, having the chance to play European football in your career?
Well, that was one of the sort of things that drew me to Leicester. I mean, not least because it was an hour away and I could commute, but it was probably the most established team at the time. I had an opportunity to, I had three teams. I had Southampton, Glen Hoddle, I had Adam Kirbishley at Charlton, which of course I ended up moving to afterwards, but and had Peter Taylor at Leicester, who I said earlier, he tried to sign me at Southend, so I think he'd, and him, when he was assistant to Glenn Hoddle with England, I think they'd watched me a few times as a pool of those players that maybe could push into the England squad, had a good season in the Premier League. So I signed for Leicester at the time. I mean, we started the season incredibly well. I mean, I think we were top of the league after we had a top of the table clash with Man United after, I think, 10 games, which was a great start. And then after that, kind of went a little bit downhill. You know, we didn't finish the season well, but the UEFA Cup was one of the highlights. I mean, that was just something, it was just a new experience for me. We played formerly, I think it's Krajina or something like that. It's the former Red Star Belgrade. We were meant to play over in Croatia, but I think it was Croatia, but there was like civil war at the time. I think it was Milosevic. Civil war, so they couldn't play there, so they played in Austria. The game, it was at Vienna Stadium. It was unbelievable atmosphere, absolutely incredible experience, you know, to play home and away. But yeah, there's something, it's things like that. You know, people think players playing in those games is just another game, but it's not. When you're a kid, you dream about those type of games. You dream about playing in different competitions, you know, and certainly the more you grow up, European competition was one. Wow, I'd love to be at a club that could play in those type of games. And it was only the two games we played in, but it was a great, great experience.
What was the bond of the team like as well? When you went over together, obviously, I'm guessing that brings you closer together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, really. I mean, a great group at the time. I mean, I'd come in on the back of it, but you had players like Matt Elliott, Jerry Taggart, Muzzy, is it, Neil Lennon at the time. You know, to name but a few.
It would have been
Tim Flowers. Tim Flowers. I mean, they had a great. They were all really sort of Martin O'Neill's players and that group. And Peter tried to, in fairness to Peter, he tried to advance it and tried to move it forward. But it was such a unique group, it was such a strong group. It was very difficult to do that. But to be part of that group for a season, because I think that first season, I think I played every game in every competition. It was a great experience. They were really top players, top characters, really together. And then it kind of just started to disband a little bit and they didn't quite have the success that they obviously hoped for.
Yeah, and the following season, obviously a tough year for the club, tough year for yourself as well. Is that when the injuries started really kicking in for you that season?
Well, it's funny because I'd never been injured before. Never been injured. I got an injury to my knee at a second game in against Arsenal at Highbury. I remember going up for a header, back post, headering it out for a corner, and just landed a little bit awkwardly. And it just felt weird, my knee. And I'm chasing, you know, when you're chasing the likes of Thierry Henry and Will Tord and Bergkamp, you know, you don't really want a problem with your knee. It's hard enough with a fully functioning limbs, you know, so, although you wouldn't think so, watching me play against those types of players at times. But my knee just kept collapsing. I don't know what it was, just kept going. And I said to, listen, I'm going to have to come off. They thought it was a cartilage injury and it turned out to be a lot worse. And I think I'd missed 6 games up until that point with injury. I'd never been injured at all. You know, I was 20, I think I was about 27, 28.
In the peak of your career.
Peak of my career. And I'd just, you know, again, I'd just had a top season for a Premier League side. I believe that I would have gone and played in the Premier League till I was 35 because I was a fit player. I'd reached my peak. I was doing really, really well. And it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right. And then it recovered enough to, you know, sign for Charlton and move on. But I then got another injury after that. But that was really the start. And I knew at that point, I just knew there was something that wasn't right. I had an opportunity to sign for Charlton at the end of that first season. They came back in for me. And I actually said to them, listen, I'm not fit, I'm not right, I don't want to sign for you. I could have gone and took like a 4-year contract and just signed, like I'm sure some players would. But I didn't think that was right. I didn't want to join a new club injured. I didn't want to join a new club not at my peak. So I said, listen, I'm not going to do that. And I tried to get fit for Leicester.
Mm. And that Charlton move did eventually follow after the relegation, of course, back to the Premier League. But was that the lowest point of your playing career, having those, you know, obviously few years injured?
Yeah, I think so. Having the previous season injured and coming back, I think I played the last sort of 7 or 8 games of that season.
I'm guessing it's a very lonely place.
Yeah, it is. I mean, listen, there's great people around, and you know, I mean, I signed for Charlton, and again after, I think again it was the second game in, I did my knee again, worse this time, and just from that moment onwards, I just knew it wasn't right, and I felt. I mean, there's mixed feelings, really. I think there's feelings of disappointment for yourself because you kind of know. I think as any player will tell you, or any supposedly elite athlete will tell you, you know, when you have an injury like that, particularly back then, because those days, the early days, with my injury, you know, there wasn't a lot known about it. There wasn't many people who'd had them. So I don't think there was the same sort of medical knowledge there would be now. I'm sure this type of injury now probably wouldn't be that overly serious. You know, you're sure you'd come back from it. But back then it was different, and I had an operation straight away to try and remedy it. I came back and played, I think, 5 or 6 times. I was made captain by Alan Kirbysley. I think that was a disappointment. Again, everything had just advanced a little bit. You know, I was now captain of a team that were, I think, 6th or 7th in the Premier League. I was playing the best football of my career. But then after 13 games at Charlton, it was cut short. And there's feelings of guilt almost, because you feel like, you know, I've signed for this club and I'm not going to be able to play, you know, and it's a horrible, horrible feeling, because whatever people, fans talk about money, or people talk about money and he's getting paid and all that, but you just want to play. You know, I'm 28, I've got 7 years left in my career, and I've now got to think about what, you know, most people at 28, your career ends and you've got to start something new you've never trained for. It's quite a daunting prospect. I know you've got money behind you, so I know you're slightly more financially secure than the average person, which makes decisions slightly easier, but it was difficult. But I learned, you know what, I probably learned more in that 2 years. I worked with lots of brilliant physios, but I worked with one physio called Wayne Diesel at Charlton at the time. I think he's now, or he was, head of medicine at Miami Dolphins, so you can see the sort of career he's had. I think he's at another American club now, but he was absolutely brilliant. He was a South African guy. He taught me a lot about rehab and what you really need. He used to always have a phrase. He said, listen, you need to go to the dark place. Unless you've been to the dark place, you don't know what's out there. And it was almost about working harder than you think that you're potentially capable of. And it taught me a lot in those 2 years. So, yes, I was injured. Yes, I had that horrible disappointment of, you know, trying to get back and not getting back. But I also learned a lot. And that's when I started thinking about coaching. That's when I started thinking about things. When you do another gym session for the 400th day in a row, And you've got nothing else to think about, you know. So I was also injured with Mark Fisher at the time, and Fisher was a great character. So Fisher got you through most of the days with his humour.
that was actually going to be my next question. Having that, you know, time away from the game on the treatment table, did that encourage you to go into management and to think that way, to get a head start?
Yeah, I'd already thought about it when I was at Cambridge at 17. I was actually coaching some of the School of Excellence kids on a Tuesday night, you know, in my own time. I did two or three sessions there, so it was something I kind of wanted to do anyway. I don't know why, just something that I wanted to do. So it's always been there. But I think certainly about 2 years when you're rehabbing, every day you go in, you're rehabbing, you're watching the players walking out to train, and it's mentally it's so tough. But I think what you learn very quickly is, you know, feeling sorry for yourself is going to get you absolutely nowhere. So you try to be productive. So you start to think, OK, well, if this is the end at 28, 30, what am I going to do? You know, because I don't want to sit on my backside all my life. I'm not financially going to be able to do that anyway. So you have to start thinking about what am I going to do. So you start thinking about sessions. You start thinking about different managers' approaches. I started writing stuff down at that point. In anticipation for maybe going into coaching. And I made a decision, if I had to finish, I'm going to go into coaching at a low level and I'm going to try and learn what it is to be a coach, in my opinion, properly, you know, rather than just go and get a job straight away. I wanted to build up from the bottom and really understand it. I read a lot of business books, I read a lot of psychology books, I read a lot about sort of team dynamics, human dynamics, how to deal with people. And just lots of other things as well, physiology, just to try and understand lots of different aspects. And you know, I think that really held me in pretty good stead.
Mm. And, of course, a lot of different influences from different managers that you had at the time as well, Kirkett.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you take bits from every manager. I think, I did a talk for the FA Pro Licence about 6 months ago. And I started off saying, my opinion is you have to be authentic. You know, you can take lots of things, everyone does, you take little bits from different managers, but you can't be one of those managers. You have to be yourself, because I think players see through it if you're not. So I think you have to be first and foremost authentic to what you like and how you want to play the game and how you want to manage and treat people. But at the same time, you take little bits from everyone. So if I look at my career, I take the structure of John Beck and the way that he got a group of players to play how he wanted, forget the philosophy of how he wanted to play, to actually, you know, the methodology of getting them to play the way he wanted and how he taught that was really fascinating. Then to look at people like Mike Walker, Joe Royal, Peter Taylor, Jim Smith, Steve McLaren, Trevor Francis, Alan Kirbishley, you know, all those managers, you know, just Sam Allardyce, you just take little bits that you liked. And that's how you judge it. And also sessions, I wrote all the sessions I could remember down, because again, you know, you're a young coach, you need to have ideas, you need to have different variety of sessions to be able to put on. And then as you get a little bit more experience, you then try to really understand what that session achieves rather than just the session itself.
And I mean, obviously, you had that chance to come back into your playing career. A big step down from where you were in terms of Charlton in the Premier League, down to the National League with Burton. What was that like, having that drop in your playing career from being at the very top to, you know, four divisions down?
Well, first of all, I mean, that was a sort of 18-month, two-year gap, and my knee needed time to just settle down, really. I think when you're rehabbing all the time, when you're trying to come back, you know, I think the problem then is it just becomes irritated all the time. And it needed time to settle. And I ended up coaching Derby under-14s. I then coached Derby under-18s full-time for a season. I was working for the FA, doing little bits, working for the PFA, doing some sort of... You know, people don't realise, you know, I was going coaching a local Derbyshire FA coaching course, level 2, 30 punters turning up, all different walks of life, some incredible people turning up for courses, you know, people that had lost limbs, and I've got to try and now coach, I've got to now do demos with them on how to do it. So it made you appreciate different illnesses, because of course you do a level 2 coaching course, you know, there's all different people from all different walks of life and different physical situations. So you had to learn. It wasn't about you. It wasn't about what you wanted. It was about what they needed. And it was a real eye-opener to do that sort of thing. So I'd done sort of 2 years of that. And then there was just something in the back of my mind, because I'd finished early. I just wanted to... I'd been joining in occasionally with the under-18s and I felt quite good. My knee felt quite good. So Nigel Clough, I remember chatting to Nigel. Nigel's brilliant. I still speak to him a lot now. And Nigel said, we've got, he said, come and train, just come along and train for a night. St. George's, come along and train. I remember driving down there. Back then, there was no buildings at St. George's, just pictures and floodlights. So you turn up, I'm looking at this like farmer's gate thing, and is that St. George's Park? I've got no idea, and I could see his lights in the distance. So anyway, another car's come along and gone through, so I followed him down. It was like Field of Dreams. You drove down there. It was just an immaculate pitch, like, but would have probably cost £1 million to lay. Floodlights on it and a National League team training on it. So it was very unique in terms of environment most conference teams would have had at the time.
It wasn't the step down as you would have
thought. It wasn't a step down in that sense, but I went and played. I was just playing for fun. I wasn't playing because I wanted to be, I just wanted to play, so I love football, you know, and I almost hadn't got it out of my system. So I went and trained for one session, and on the way home, I was driving into, because I lived in the same village as Nigel, just a sort of couple of miles down, and he pulled in a lay-by and sort of indicated. So I pulled alongside him. He said, listen, just thinking. He said, we've got Peterborough in the FA Cup at the weekend. He said, I'll play you. I was thinking, I've only trained once. And but that was Nigel. He obviously saw that you could offer something different to a lot of the other lads in terms of your experience. And I didn't do that then, but I went and trained a few more times. And I can't remember my first game. My first game was Forest Green away. And I remember it was a really physical game. The pitch at the time, it was the old Forest Green ground. No, hardly any grass, not a blade of grass on the pitch. And the first time someone had passed the ball to my feet was about 36 minutes in. And I must have headed the ball about 400 times. But I loved it. I just loved it because it was football. It was real. People were turning up from work for games, and it was a great experience for 18 months. I played sort of 45 times, something like that. And then I got to the point where I literally couldn't walk to my front door after the game. It stiffened up that much. I'd get out of my car. It was like, this is stupid. I'm going to cripple myself. But
it was worth it.
It was worth it. And you know, I think again, it's just you love the game, and. And it was hard to get it out of your system.
Mm. And at Earthcourt, you eventually joined the coaching staff. Did you always see yourself as going into management at that point, or did you just want to be a coach involved in the game?
No, I'd applied for a few jobs. I mean, it's funny. Again, I applied for. I went to see. It was bizarre. I had a spell where I thought, you know what? I want to manage because I couldn't. I hadn't been offered any jobs. I'd been sort of in between jobs for about a year. Well, again, I was doing some PFA work, I was doing some other stuff, but it wasn't full-time. And I'd finished playing, and now it was, right, I need to coach now, seriously. So I looked up, I applied for quite a lot of jobs, and again, it's a sort of lesson, really, for anyone who's out there who's been persistent but not managed to get a job they want. You know, it's very easy to give up, particularly coaching, because there's so few jobs. Back then, there was even less because the academies were a lot smaller and you didn't have the vast amount of jobs that some of them have. And I applied for Buxton, and it was Conference North. I think it was Conference North. It was Conference North. I went for an interview. I turned up. I hope the people of Buxton, I hope the directors of Buxton are watching this because they might remember it. I had a PowerPoint presentation, but I printed off ready. And I walked in, and it was the old, no disrespect to Buxton, because it was an old club, but I walked into the boardroom, and it was like something out of Mike Bassett. You know, all the leather chairs are ripped, and, you know, and I thought, I don't think this is quite the place for the PowerPoint. So I turned it over and just chatted to the guys, didn't get the job. And then I was looking at moving to Australia. I'd got to the point where I had a young family. We're looking at something different. My brother-in-law was over in Sydney. Northern Beaches, so it was an incredible, incredible area. And we went over there to visit him, had a look around at schools, started applying for visas, because I had to try and get an investor visa. It was quite complicated, but I couldn't get a visa. And looked for a visa, and I was over there and got a phone call from Pesh. So Pesh I knew from Derby, I'd coached, and he was really honest. He said, look, I tried to get Darren Moore in as my assistant, but Morrow couldn't get out of his contract at the time at Barnsley. So obviously, you know, work with you. Would you come in? I knew the club. So I said, yeah, listen, I'll come and have a chat with you. That'd be brilliant. So went in there and had three great years as assistant. You know, absolutely loved it. Loved working with Pesh. Still speak to him now. Great guy. People forget, you know, but that first season in the Football League was so important. And we kept them in the Football League. And that was a massive factor for Burton Albion. Just trying to establish themselves as a Football League side. Pesh did a great job. You know, and 3 years in, I just remember it just start. We had a little spell. We hadn't won in about 12, and you could just see. I think he was getting a little bit frustrated with certain things at the time because Burton as a club, it's obviously a great club, but, you know, certain limitations. And I think he got a little bit frustrated. And in the end, 14 games unbeaten, without winning, I think. And Ben called me and Paulie and says, look, we're making a change. Would you look after the team short term till the end of the season? And we'll see where it goes. So yeah, that was it, really. That was a sort of inadvertent chance into management.
What was it like when you were told that, though, when you went in to see the players straight after? Obviously, assistant manager taking over. I've asked this quite a lot of players who I've recently spoken to. What was it like when the assistant takes over? But from your point of view, what is it like to, in terms of changing your approach? Or does everything stay the same? Do you make people call you gaffer?
I didn't change that much because, I mean, I was doing... I'm sure Pesh won't mind me saying, but I was doing a lot of the coaching anyway with the players. And Pesh would... you know, oversee that, and he would do the main sessions, and he would do obviously all the sort of team talks. But I would still be involved in that, so it wasn't. I think I was probably more involved than a normal assistant would potentially be involved. But it wasn't any different. It was funny because I mean I felt an incredible pressure because regardless of whether you've been an assistant or not, you know, a chance to manage a team doesn't come along very often, and you know you think 92 football league clubs. But ultimately, there isn't, or football clubs, you know, there isn't many opportunities. And there's a lot of people out there trying to do it. So I felt incredible pressure. I felt quite comfortable, felt quite natural to me to go into the dressing room and address the players. I don't think it was, I didn't certainly, you'd probably have to ask the players what was the difference, but it certainly didn't feel any different to me. And also, I was only caretaker manager at the time, so I wasn't actually the manager. And it was bizarre because I remember starting my first game was Northampton at home. I still blame Legsy for this, and I'm only joking because I signed him afterwards, but we conceded and he made a mistake in the 94th minute and it would have been a draw. We should have really won the game and we ended up losing 1-0 and it was like another defeat. And then we went to Wimbledon the next game and I think we lost 4-1. It was after that I learnt a really valuable lesson and it was one of my biggest regrets really. And you know, if Pesh was in front of me now, I'd probably apologise to him because I did the old classic, frustrated, straight. I've done this since at Stoke, which I'll probably come on to, but never go out there. Ben Robinson said to me, always give yourself 5 minutes. Never go out there emotionally still attached to the game when you do your press. And I went out there and said, listen, we're not fit enough. We're not, you know, and it sounded like a criticism of Pesh. It wasn't really meant to do that. It was frustration. But we couldn't get that win. You know, so it was a really interesting time. It was a really interesting experience. Ben Robinson pulled me and said, listen, bit of advice, you know, give yourself 5 minutes to cool off. So again, little lessons you're learning all the time. You know, you'd rather not learn 4-0 away from home to Wimbledon defeat, but it's a lesson nevertheless, and you have to take it on board and try and improve. And we managed to keep the side up that season because we were dropping. We got a few results. I think we managed to get something like 10 points in 10 games, which actually at the time was not bad. And then Ben had the decision in the summer whether he felt as though we had the tools and the skill to then take over, really, I suppose, was a decision he had to make.
Yeah, and certainly you did have the tools. You know, two successful seasons followed, defeats in the playoffs again. Obviously, I'm guessing you don't really want to go into that too much after the recent discussion. But you then had, you know, that successful start again to the following season after that. And clubs were becoming interested in you. Blackpool, I believe, were one of the teams at the time, a championship club at the time as well. What made you turn down that opportunity?
Yeah, I asked for the chance to go and speak to them. I went to meet Carl Oyston. You know, you could see quite clearly their structure was very different from a lot of football league clubs. And there's no disrespect to them, but I just felt it wasn't the right opportunity. I think if you leave Burton, you know, particularly with the momentum we had, I mean, you felt that season. We made three great signings that season. We brought John Messino in, we brought Lucas Aikins in, and we brought Stuart Bevan in. And at that level at the time, those three players, we pushed the boat a little bit. I remember speaking to Ben and saying, listen, I think if we can get three in, you know, we'll go up this season. And he backed us, we did. I felt that season. I mean, I think we won the first seven or eight games, or we'd won seven and drawn one or something like that. We were top of the league. And then there was a speculation. And often what you find is funny because whenever there's speculation, around the manager. You often see the team's results just tail away for two or three games, and I think it's just that uncertainty within the dressing room. It's everyone talks about it. It just takes away the focus. I never went to Blackpool, and then the Birmingham opportunity came along, and it was a difficult decision in some ways, because again we felt as though that was an opportunity for us to go up that season. We felt there was a really strong situation there.
It was too good a club to turn down.
It was too good a club to turn down, and it was a bizarre really, because I remember I think I spoke to, or they'd approached the club briefly, I'd spoke to them briefly, and then I got a phone call after we played Stevenage away, lost 1-0, stupid own goal, disappointed me since, because we dropped to third, and actually I think we'd have stayed top of the division, so I'd have left top, but we went down to third, and I got a phone call saying, we need you to come and get things sorted. They'd just lost. Someone said, have you seen Birmingham's result? And they went 8-0. I thought, they've won 8-0. They're not going to change their manager now. So they've lost 8-0 at home to Bournemouth. So people said it was an impossible job, but in some ways that's what attracted me to the job. You know, not least we were virtually all the staff at the time were virtually all ex-Birmingham players. So we had a little bit of an affinity with the club. But it was just a great opportunity.
Like you mentioned there, the challenge, something that excited you. Similar to like what I suppose like Danny and Nicky Cowley may be doing now with Huddersfield. It looks like a difficult job maybe, but the opportunity to change it around, is that something which tempts people to go into those jobs?
Well, what you tend to find is, I can't speak for other managers, but I would imagine the Cowley brothers have done the same as me at Burton, where you get to a point where you go, you know, how much further can you go? And if you turn down this type of opportunity, will another opportunity come? Because football is such a fickle thing. You know, one minute you can be flavour of the month getting offered loads of things, and the next minute you lose 5-6 games in the spin, you could be out of work in the club you're at. So there is often opportunities to go you have to seriously consider, and it's not because you're disloyal, it's not because you want to move and don't love that club anymore, it's just because it's natural progression, and it's like anyone in any job. You know, you show me 30,000 fans and I'll guarantee all 30,000 at some point will have had an opportunity to move up in their career and thought about it and took it or not took it. I mean, that's just how it works. You've got a family, you know, there's different decisions to be made. So I think for them, they probably look at Lincoln, they've done so well, they've had opportunities. And maybe they feel as though it's a great one for them. They're all gambles. You know, Huddersfield is a gamble for anyone because of where they are in the league. Birmingham was a gamble for us because of where they are in the league. But ultimately, you have to back your methods. And in some ways, they're good jobs to take because the only way is up for some of those jobs. You know, you can't get any worse than where they currently are. Birmingham the same. So, you know, your challenge is to try and change that momentum, which is what you try and do.
And you seem to, the club obviously, difficult circumstances at the time for a club like Birmingham. What did you feel you got right at the club? Like you say, the only way was up, but there's up and then there's getting them, you know, to seventh place in the league.
Yeah, we had a great start. I mean, I think they'd won one home game in 26, which was quite incredible to me. And I think we won 7 of the first 10 games, I think, having gone in there. So for a club that everyone felt as though it was going to be impossible to turn round. You know, we'd won a real quick amount. So we got that instant buy-in from the players. We got an instant buy-in from the fans. We had a great synergy with, you know, whatever people say. We had an unbelievable relationship with the fans. And I think we just went in and we just struck it off with the players straight away. You know, we had great fun. We made it very, very clear. It's almost like going into any business. It's impact management. You've got to impact, you know, that group straight away, and then you have a long-term philosophy as well. So there's almost a short-term plan and a long-term plan, and the short-term plan really was to be very clear on how we played, to make it very simple, to allow the players to flourish and express themselves within that strong structure, and just get the team giving the fans what they wanted, which was, you know, you play at St Andrews. Yes, they want great attacking and exciting football, but they also want a little bit of grit and some determination and people winning tackles just as much as they want to be seeing a great bit of skill. And it just lifted the fans straight away. I think the second game in, we drew against Wolves the first game, 0-0. Local derby against Wolves, who were a good side at the time. I think they were around the top of the league. It gave us a little bit of confidence. And then the next home game was at Watford. And again, bear in mind, they hadn't won for a long period. No one really expected an awful lot. And I think we scored a winner in the 84th minute. And I can still remember it now. Still sends shivers down my spine that, you know, the whole end erupted, started singing Keep Right On. And listen, if that was the only game you ever had in football management, it would have been worth it, because it was just an incredible, incredible experience.
Does it change a lot from managing in League Two to then managing in the Championship? You know, a lot of money in the Championship now, obviously, and it's essentially, you know, it's one of the top leagues in Europe. Is the whole process around management different in terms of your facilities and things like that? Do you have to treat everything different?
Not really. I think the essence of management is the same. You know, you treat people, whether that's the staff, whether that's the tea lady, whether that's the kit man, whether that's the coach driver, whether that's the players, your best player, your player perhaps with the least ability, you treat them all the same. You treat them all with respect. You treat them, you value them. You're interested in who they are as people. You're interested in, you know, how you can help them as a player. And I don't think it's any different. People said to me at the time, you wait till you go to a Championship, players are so much more ego, bigger egos, it'd be harder to deal with. They weren't. They've been no different for me. In some ways it's harder at League Two, because you've got a player on £600 or £700 a week and he's got £100 appearance money or £200 appearance money. If he's not in the team, you're going to know about it, because it has a massive effect on his life and his family, you know. So I think it was actually easier in some ways managing higher up, and people would think it would be harder, but it's around how you treat people. Your methods don't change. I think you adjust your methods slightly. So yes, a Championship player would expect a little bit more in terms of information, as opposed to maybe a League Two player at the time. But it wasn't that much different.
Like I talked about earlier, it was such a successful year, that the year you finished seventh. How shocked were you when you found out that there wasn't really that commitment from the club and you were eventually replaced by Gianfranco Zola after seemingly overachieving?
Yeah, pretty shocked, pretty surprised. I got called in for a meeting. We played Ipswich the night before. Pretty poor game, but we'd won it 2-1 nevertheless. And, you know, any time you play Mick McCarthy's teams and you come out of a win, no matter how you come out of it, you've had to earn it pretty hard. They're never easy games. I remember getting called into a meeting the next day. I had a meeting with someone else on Pride Park. I had a meeting with a mortgage company, because I was looking to buy a house at the time, and I wanted to sort of some advice. I was meeting them, I think it was at like 11 o'clock. And I got a call from someone at the club saying, look, the new owners want to meet you. I said, right, OK, well, any idea what it's about? I said, well, no, but they want to meet you at 11 o'clock. So I was like, well, can I not make it like 1 o'clock? Because I've got a meeting first. No, they want to meet you at 11 o'clock. So my wife said, look, you better go. So as I left the door, I said, I hope I don't get sacked. I was actually only joking. And I drove there, and as I walked in, the new owners weren't there. It was a chief exec and the head of finance at the time. And I could see they were shaking a little bit, and I knew something was not right. And straight away, it became apparent that they were going to sack me. And it was a shock. There were certain things in the background that were... I think one of my biggest regrets with Birmingham is people always... You know, I think every club can fit their own narrative when a manager leaves, you know, but ultimately, people say to me, oh, you know, there were other clubs. There was a lot of interest from other clubs. I had quite a few other clubs that... wanted to activate my release clause, which I think was about £500,000 at the time. So once they activate your release clause, you want to go, you can go. There's nothing stopping you. You know, I didn't want to go. You know, I would have gone. That was very, very simple. But what I was asking the club at the time for was a little bit more commitment for myself and the staff. So, you know, that was what it was really down to. And they you got owners, they spend a lot of money, they can do whatever they want. And it's completely their prerogative, you know. But it was disappointing, because I felt as though at the time we had a great opportunity to build something. It was the first time, actually, we had a little bit of money to spend, ironically, and obviously we never got a chance to do that.
No, and did you feel harshly done by as well? We talked about the narrative, but a lot came out afterwards saying, you know, they wanted to bring Gianfranco Zola in to change the style of football and things, yeah, like that. Do you take massive offence to that in terms of how you play, you know, how you manage and how you coach and how you see your teams play?
Well, I think that's something that's followed us since. I think that narrative of you know, perhaps more defensive football, which I think is actually unfair, because at Birmingham we've got a team that couldn't win a game, to winning games of football and scoring goals and being very structurally organised. I don't think there's any, you know, I watch a lot of teams now, and they're very similar, you know. But I think it's just an easy way to talk about. They wanted to change. Yeah, look, they might have wanted more attacking, exciting football. But you know, I think to appoint a manager 2 hours after they sacked the other one probably showed that it was something they were planning to do. Again, fine, I have no problem with that. And they tried to do what they wanted, and ultimately it didn't work. And I think that was down to, I think for me, any way you play, the players have to be capable of that, you know, unless you've got millions and millions to create a side that can do it. And even then, I think it has to take time. You can't build a side quickly, you know. We were looking at different, we brought Fabrini in, we brought John Terrell in. We were trying to make the team a little bit more technically superior. We had plans that transfer window to bring some better technical players in. We had Shea Adams who'd just come into the, you know, we'd not long signed, just come into the side that was developing into a player that we felt could offer us a little bit more. But, and I think that's something that's followed us since. I mean, you know, we then went to Derby and we had a spell where I think we won more games by 3 goals or more than any other side in the Championship, yet we were still labelled negative, which seems a little bit unfair, but it's not really for me to put a label on what we we do.
Is it a case of, not that you take satisfaction in maybe what could be perceived as the failure that comes afterwards, but is it a case of, you know, be careful what you wish for? Obviously we've seen with like Ipswich, for example, with sacking Mick McCarthy, they're now in League One. Is it a case of that, that you have to, at certain clubs, maybe, you know, play in a certain way to get them up the league?
Well, you do. Listen, at the time, we had sort of something like the fourth lowest budget in the Championship. Birmingham was a big club, but financially, we didn't have a massive budget. You know, I think when I first went in, I think I was allowed to bring one player, £5,000 a week, into the club on loan. And we brought Michael Morrison in, who, of course, went on to be an absolutely brilliant, brilliant captain for Birmingham. But that was it. So you had to work with what you had. And therefore, what you've got to do is you've got to find a way of playing. We had Damari Gray, we had Dave Cottrell, we had Clayton Donaldson, to name but a few in those attacking positions. And we had Paul Robinson at centre-half. And what you soon learned, Robbo was, I think, 34, 35 at the time. If you made the game tight and compact, Robbo was the best centre-half in the division. You know, he was so competitive, he read the game well. If you put him in loads of space, at 34, 35, anyone's going to find that a little bit harder to deal with. So we couldn't play high up the pitch as easily. We had to play a little bit deeper. That gave those forwards a little bit of space to then go and counter-attack into. We became a really good counter-attacking side. When you move to a different team, you play a slightly different way. But you still have certain elements of that. You know, listen, Antonio Conte won the league with Chelsea being very, very aggressively defensive. But they were brilliant. You know, Dortmund were one of the best pressing sides I've ever seen in Europe. Fantastic. Man City have got great players and they can play a fantastic way, but everyone's different. There's no right way or wrong way. And you know, we've had a lot of games where we've won the game comfortably with really good attacking play, but everyone seems to... I think everyone wants to put a label... People like to put a label on things, don't they? And it's not really for me to do that. But I like my teams to be organised, so I certainly won't apologise.
Mm. So that's... Your philosophy as a manager, I take it, is the organisation, and then what comes of that?
I think you have. Listen, you can't concede goals. If you concede a lot of goals as a team, you're not going to win anything. Firstly, so I think it always comes off that very, very structured defence. And then once you get that structure, then you can attack with a little bit more freedom. But I think we've showed we're flexible. We've played 4-2-3-1 at Birmingham and been very, very organised counter attacking. We've played 4-2-3-1 at Derby and had a little bit more possession and a little bit more attacking mentality. We then flipped to a back five at Derby and played very well towards the end of one season. We then played 4-3-3 at Stoke. People don't realise, I think we were fourth. We had the fourth most possession when we left in the division. But if you're losing games, you're losing games, and people will still criticise. It's just, listen, it's the way it is. I don't think you, as a manager, you have to believe in what you believe in. But we've been pretty flexible in the way that we've done things, and we'll continue to be flexible. I'll always look at ways of how can I be more attacking. Listen, you know, I think you want to be an attacking coach. You want to be perceived as an attacking coach. I won't lose those defensive structures. But of course, you know, when you're out of the game, you look at, okay, you know, what are the ways that we could improve some of those philosophies? And that's certainly something I'd like to be better at, definitely.
You've touched on it, though, but then you got the chance to go to Derby. Not a step down like a lot of managers who would have been sacked. You've come to a club perceived to be on the up, probably perceived to be a better club to manage at that time than Birmingham would have been, I think it's fair to say. And you've sort, like you touched on there, you've sort of changed the way you played a little bit at Derby in terms of that more attacking philosophy. What was it like, though, when you had that opportunity at a club like that that seems to be going all in the right direction, destination eventually to the Premier League?
Well, it was an amazing opportunity because it was one that, certainly joining as an under 14 coach, quite a few years before, probably 10 years before, I always felt, wow, this is an amazing club to, if you could ever come back and manage this club, then you'd have certainly had relative success in your managerial career. So I think that, the opportunity came about. I certainly didn't hesitate to take the opportunity. It was something that I felt was, something I couldn't turn down. They'd finished ninth the season before, or they were about 10th or 11th when we took over. We had a little bit of the end of that season, which was really important for us. And then starting a new season, it was quite clear what our objectives were. Our objectives were to try and get promoted. And you realise what a brilliant, brilliant club once more it was, going back there as manager. So we'd a good season. I think we could have been better. We were second in the league around January, and I felt as though we had a great opportunity to get promoted. And then we had a spell of about 10 games where I think we only won one, and it just took that momentum out of us. We managed to claw it back and get in the playoffs. And I think we were unfortunate in the sense that, if we'd have played anyone other than Fulham, who I think had been on a 20-game unbeaten run at the time, where they were the best team in the division other than Wolves, in my opinion, certainly in form. I think anyone else, and we'd have had a very good chance of getting promoted.
Yeah, like I say, I think Fulham, it's fair to say, probably played maybe the best football as well.
Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
That year as well.
Absolutely.
During that season, though, Stoke came in, they were interested in speaking to you. Why wasn't that the right opportunity for you then when they were in the Premier League? Or was it a case of it wasn't as concrete as we think?
Yeah, no, there was pretty strong interest there. But I didn't think it was the right thing to do. I'd left Birmingham early. In my opinion, I didn't think it was the right thing to do to leave Derby mid-season. I'd only been there sort of, a year at that point.
I want to touch on that as well. You sort of mentioned it earlier, but was that maybe a reason why you had that slump in form, that distraction of the Stoke job?
Maybe. I mean, it tends to happen around those times. I never really sort of looked at that, but quite possibly. But there were other reasons as well, I think. So I think that period, it didn't feel, it didn't feel right. I mean, turning down a Premier League job, when you look back, it's quite a brave move because a lot of people, I might never, ever get that opportunity to do that again. But it wasn't right. I felt as though it was important to be loyal to Derby. I think it was important to see if we could get promoted. And then obviously when the opportunity came round again, there were reasons why I took it. I didn't, financially it was not a move that was better for me, and I can honestly say that that wasn't why I went. I went because of the ambition of what I felt Stoke wanted to do at the time. And listen, I still speak to Mel Morris now. I have a really good relationship with Mel. Still speak to Steve Pearce, chief exec. I've got a great relationship with all the people at the club. Certainly wasn't any animosity in leaving. I understand people will see that me leaving as disloyal. I can see that. I understand that, and probably made a mistake in doing it. But at the same time, the plan for that summer was a very, very severe plan at Derby. It didn't actually do that in the end, but it was a severe plan. And I just felt as though what they wanted to achieve with that plan, it needed to be done over two or three seasons rather than one summer. And I felt it was really difficult to do. And I just said, look, I'd rather be honest and say, but I don't think it's, or I'm the right person to do that. And I think it was fairly amicable in the end.
You mentioned the ambition of Stoke there. You sort of saw that with the budget you maybe had at Stoke last season, bringing in a lot of players on big money coming down. How much pressure was there to deliver because of that?
There's a lot of pressure. I think looking back now, there was a lot of internal talk of, you know, when we get promoted this season and, you know, when we go. And I think that was difficult. When I look back now, I probably should have curtailed that more, because if you think about Stoke, had a tough couple of seasons, avoided relegation the year before and then got relegated the season after. I think they'd conceded the most goals in the Premier League. They'd scored the least. So it certainly wasn't a season where they were unfortunate to get relegated. And as often happens with a team that's been in the Prem for 10 years, you know, they had some top players. The problem with that is a lot of those top players don't want to play in the Championship. And that's where the difficulty lies. I think if you look this season, a lot of the teams have not been out the Championship for long. Therefore, the players are a little bit more au fait with what it is to be a Championship player. The rigours, the 46 games, the difficulty. So there was a lot of pressure straight away. I think we made some good signings, some solid signings. I think because some of those didn't perform as well as they could have done, you get labelled. You know, we went all out to go back up that season, and I think the amount of money we spent, we obviously expected to have done better. What I found was it took probably 6 or 7 games really to stabilise the whole thing, and it was ironic actually, because when we stayed, I think we had one defeat in 18 going into Boxing Day game with Birmingham, which you would say we didn't win enough of those games, but we had a really good spell. We were unbeaten in 9 away from home. So to a certain degree, if you look now at where they are, you know, we'd stabilised a lot of those results, dealt with a lot of issues behind the scenes and felt we'd come out of it. And then, you know, listen, to a certain degree, I brought it on myself. I mean, I made a big mistake. Which I'll be really open and honest. And it was, like I said earlier, about when you go into a press conference afterwards and you're angry and you're frustrated. I got asked a question. It was funny because at the time, a local press, and I understand it, but I think Bojan, it was at the time, was such a fan's favourite and such a club favourite. But he wasn't in the 18. He wasn't even playing. I think he might have had an injury on that day. I can't remember. And I got asked about him. The first question I got asked about why Bojan wasn't in the 18. And you know, at that time as a manager, you just think, I want to talk about the team. I want to talk about the match. I don't want to talk about players. It was almost felt like it was a question to kind of rile you up a little bit. And I got riled up and I threw a comment in at that point, which I see now really as being a criticism of the fans, and certainly now I learnt a big lesson that day, because I think from there on in it was very difficult to get it back. I think that, you know, at that point we were ninth in the league. I felt as though we would have gotten the playoffs even last season, but from that point really the negativity around the place towards me for 3 games was difficult to change, and I understood why the owners had to make the decision they made. I think it was too quick in my opinion, but again, it's their prerogative. And I think really, I probably, you know, if I could, I'd apologise to the fans, because it wasn't meant as disrespect. I think at the time, when you're at Stoke at the time, there was a lot of things happening, and I didn't want to be the sort of manager that told the fans what they wanted to hear. I didn't want to just soft soap issues. So I wanted to try and take those issues on and be quite forthright with them in the media. I think sometimes that come across as being critical. And I got a little bit of stick for that.
And we talked about the end there quite a lot, but I want to talk about the first game as well of the season. That match against Leeds, when you were tipped to be, you know, favourites going into the match, going into the league season, favourites to go up.
Yeah.
That first half against Leeds was, you know, must have been difficult for you to take. And I guess that sort of, you know, looking back now, we could see how good the team Leeds were, but at the time that must have been really difficult to take from everyone at the club.
Yeah, we had, I mean, we put a team out that day, and we had a couple of players that, I think Badou Ndiaye played his first game, hadn't been fit long, and we turned out he had not a serious injury, but he wasn't fit. You could see straight away, sitting midfielder, struggled with a movement of Leeds, and he's obviously a top player. It was Bielsa's first game, I think, first league game. And I'll tell you what, I came off after 45 minutes and You look at your own team, you think, wow, we've got problems. You know, we knew that anyway, pre-season, we could see that there were games when we were nowhere near what you thought we should be at in terms of a level. But you also thought, wow, Leeds were incredible. I mean, it's probably the best Championship performance I've seen for 45 minutes from a sort of new team. Well, I say new team, but it was similar players to the season before, which was even more incredulous the way they'd done it. And you didn't have much, even pre-season, there wasn't too many indications of what they were going to do. You know, but that game was You know, you had to marvel at them, but it was a real eye-opener for us. And of course, because we were the favourites, everyone was like, wow. You know, it was a big statement. And
I was going to say, did that affect confidence? Because you were tagged as favourites going into the game, going into the season, that you'd suffered, you'd been outplayed in that match. Did that sort of come across to the players as well? Did they lose a bit of confidence?
I don't mean they lost confidence. I think there was a lot of players at the time that, you know, had not been confident the season before, because they had poor seasons. Probably still, at that point, were still hoping to move on to Premier League clubs. Because that's the thing people don't realise, you know, when the window closes after the first game, you know, you're still got players that feel like they're going into those first few games still thinking they're going to move on.
Not wanting to get injured.
Not wanting to get injured necessarily, not wanting to... Some players probably not wanting to be there. I spoke about it previously where players are having getting half their money cut because they've been relegated. I understand that, but it's, you know, you've got all sorts of complications with that. And there were so many different things, but certainly you recognise straight away this was not going to be an easy job. It was certainly wasn't going to be an easy bounce back that perhaps everyone felt it might be. And it was very difficult to change. I have to say, it was probably the one time as a manager I found it really difficult to get what we wanted to change very quickly. Obviously, everywhere else we'd been, we'd had quite a quick sort of impact. And there, we didn't have a quick impact. Looking back now, I can kind of understand why. It's only in retrospect you understand why it was difficult. But you can also understand to a certain degree. I'm not suggesting we did a good job. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is, I do think a lot of the work we did, we actually stabilised the team to a point where, you know, had we have not been expected to be promoted that season, so therefore mid-table for the fans wasn't acceptable. But I think if we'd have got a little bit more momentum, you know, I felt as though we could have finished the season very, very strongly. But of course, listen, that's easy for me to say.
Yeah, but you sort of saw it with Swansea, where there wasn't as much pressure on them to deliver after relegation. You know, similar circumstances, they had a mid-table finish, and you know, you see Graham Potter getting a Premier League job, and it working for everyone there. So, was the expectation of, I think you touched on it as well, the expectation of going in as favourites and everyone at the club believing you are favourites, was that just not realistic?
I think everyone felt as though by spending the money that we would just automatically go up, you know. And listen, you spend that amount of money, if you're the owners, you would expect your team to go up and you'd expect the manager to be able to deliver that. I understand that. You know, but like I said, there were so many things to sort out and so many things to change. It was quite difficult to get that straight away. And I have to say that pressure, that it almost felt as though unless you were in the top two, straight away, that it was just going to be unacceptable. And I understand that. I think someone said to me at the club that we came in and it was almost like the perfect storm. The team had been struggling for 3 years. The crowd had not had an awful lot to cheer about. You know, they were hoping that this would be the season where finally, and I understand that they finally had some semblance of hope that they were going to start seeing wins and attacking football and their team get promoted. And because it didn't happen quickly, I think there was just disappointment everywhere. And it felt like we were kind of in the middle of that and not got all the blame for it, but it was very easy to blame us individually with that. Whereas actually I think the issues were a lot vaster than just us, you know, and it would have took some time to solve that.
But it wasn't like a Sunderland situation, a Wolves situation when they went down immediately relegation. It seemed as if you had it under control in that sense. So is there still a bitterness there from you that the fact that you'd left so, you know, under such a cloud?
No, listen, I mean, it was ironic because I joined Stoke hoping that I could have an opportunity to build something long term. That's why I went there. I felt like with the fact that the owners had been very loyal previously to managers, I felt we had a great opportunity. And I think that's why they brought me in. They felt that too. So, no, there's no bitterness. I think in football, there's things you can control, there's things you can't. You know, I could portray how I think it can move forward. I tried to be really honest with the owners about some of the issues that I felt were there. You know, maybe that honesty worked against me to a certain degree, but there's no bitterness. I'm disappointed really that I think the fans never got to see the work that we tried to put in. I'm disappointed that perhaps I didn't. Maybe I should have been a little bit less confrontational, but I felt the job needed that, but maybe I should have done that. And you learn. You learn. I learned more at Stoke than I've learned. You know, I wish it hadn't been that way, but I learned more at Stoke, you know, than I have done at any point in my career. And certainly, I feel that I'm a much better man, or I will be a much better manager for that experience.
I want to just get through some sort of quick fire sort of questions now. Best experience of your career playing and coaching, what would you say it was?
Best experience, I think, would probably have to be the game against Crystal Palace for Derby, where we had to beat them to go up. You know, the pressure, the atmosphere, the day, the fact that we won and the celebrations after. You know, it's probably the highlight of my career as a player. As a manager, I think getting to Wembley with Burton would be a big one, because Ben Robinson at the time, the previous time he'd been involved with a club, he didn't go. But when they went to Wembley, I think it was the FA Vars, he didn't go with a club. He just left as chairman. And he was always saying to me, I'd always wanted to go to Wembley. I felt a bit of pressure to take them there after losing in the semi-final the year before. So getting to Wembley was a big thing. Of course, losing was a big disappointment, but it was still nevertheless a bit of an achievement. So probably, I'll probably say those two.
And Low lights, what would you say, playing, managing?
Wow, I've had a few. Playing, I would say my injury, really. Just the injury, I think, was a low light, but turned out in some ways to possibly be a big positive in terms of what I've done since. I think the low light as a manager, I would say, probably losing in a Wembley final. So it's ironic, but it can be a highlight. The highlight would have been getting there, beating Southend and actually getting to Wembley and that experience. The low light would have been after the game. I think, I made some of the players and I purposely watched Fleetwood pick the trophy up because I wanted to get that feeling of disappointment so we could use it the next season to feel what that felt like, you know, to use that as motivation. But that would have certainly been a low light. Probably Stoke, I would suggest, as well, would be a low light. Only because it was so disappointing. And that's why I had so much anticipation, I had so much hope, I had so many plans for what I felt could be achieved there. And the fact that I'd left a club that meant a lot to me, and it was such a big decision to do that. And then for it to go so badly, of course, was a big disappointment. But, hey, listen, it was that's life.
What's the best story of your playing and managing career, you know, that the fans wouldn't know about, that you can sort of tell?
Best story, wow. I wish you'd have given me a little bit of time.
I should have told that in advance, shouldn't
you? Should have given me a couple of hours on that.
Just giving you a bit of thinking time.
Yeah, yeah. best story. I honestly can't think of one best one. I mean, there's so many Jim Smith stories, you know. Honestly, I can't regale too many of the Jim Smith stories because they usually involved copious amounts of alcohol. I can't. I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to let you down. You're going to have to come back to me another time.
I'll come back to you another time, another different interview. We'll see what you have to say then. I want to talk now just quickly about your media career now, going in at Sky. Just tell us how that all came about, first of all, and how you actually do the role yourself, how you prepare for it, and, you know, what it involves.
Yeah, I mean, I've done quite a lot of media stuff when I finished playing, so I've sort of had a background in doing quite a bit of media. You know, I did all the sort of local commentary for like Radio Derby, BRNB, Radio Leicester. So I've had a little bit of a background, and obviously coming out of when you're out of work, you know, it's like anything. You want to work. I want to go and watch. You know, you're getting paid to watch games and talk about games. It's brilliant. I'd do one every day. You know, ultimately, I'm sure people would be sat there not wanting to see your face on Sky every day, but ultimately, that's
yeah,
one.
We can see you pretty busy.
We can see I'm pretty busy. So, you know, ultimately, I've had some good opportunities with Sky in particular. And what I try to do is try to do what I've done my whole career. If I'm going to do something, I try to do it as well as I can. You know, so I'll research, I'll watch the games, you know, for example, tonight. I'm not sure how recorded this is and when it's going out, but I'm watching Derby. I've got to go down to Sky in a minute, so I've got literally 5 minutes. Of course, I've got a train to catch.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. So I've got down to Derby. I'm watching doing the Derby Cardiff game tonight. And I'll research. I'll watch Derby's games. I'll watch Cardiff's games. I'll do a little bit of statistical research. I'll provide some clips for Derby, or some timings on some clips if needs be, for Sky if needs be. I'll probably ring someone from Derby and just get an idea of the sort of things that they've been working on, so I can try and help them portray that when I'm talking about it. So yeah, you're just trying to sound as obviously I know the Championship very well, but you're trying to trying to do the role as well as you can. Obviously, other people will be the judge of whether I'm sure there'll be Derby fans out there saying, well, he's not very good because they don't like me because I've left, and Stoke fans saying he's not very good and whatever. But I try to just do it as well as I can, and they're enjoyable things to do. Like I said, I'm watching Championship football. I'd be sat at home doing it anyway, or I'd be going to the game doing it anyway. So it's just an added bonus for me to be involved, and I'm really fortunate to be doing that.
I know you've got to get off, but final question. In terms of, you know, going back into management, is that, I'm guessing that's something you're very interested in doing. Has there been any interest? What's next for Gary Rowett?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I've had a few opportunities that I've not felt have been the right fit. I think it's important for me, the next job I get is not, for me it's about having an opportunity to go in and build something again, whatever level that's at. So, of course, I'd like that to be Championship level. I'd consider working in a different country. I'd consider working in a different league. I'm pretty open to that. Coaching's about experiences and about learning, but what I've done is, I mean, what's been brilliant for me is I've had now sort of 7 or 8 months to really hone my methods, really hone my philosophy, trying to think about ways we can improve it. And I've tried to use that time to study other teams as well, you know, in different countries, different leagues. I've been to watch quite a few clubs work, different sports. So I feel I'm in a great position. I'm really, I've been 6 months probably fine. I'm out running in the hills over there. You can see the pretty difficult terrain. And I've enjoyed the time with my family, but I'm at that point now where I've got that sort of burning edge to get back in, and I'm just hoping that the right opportunity presents itself. And when it does, you know, I think they're going to get an incredibly... I can still hear Joe Royal's words in my ears, the eye of the tiger, and they're certainly going to see a manager with the eye of the tiger motivated to get success. Because I think, you know, every club, apart from some aspects of a Stoke job, I think we've been successful. And I think, you know, define success, but been relatively successful. And I think we'll be a really good fit for a lot of clubs.
It might be a difficult commute if you're going to work abroad from Derby. But listen, Gary, it's been a fantastic insight listening to you. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
It's been my pleasure.
Good luck in whatever path your career takes next. I'm sure whatever direction it goes in, it'll be a positive one.
Fabulous. Thanks for your time.
Top man.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Brilliant.
The official EFL podcast. The best reaction to all the match action. Available every week.